Henry, Arcadia is thrilled to welcome you to 17 Questions. Let us begin. So how does it feel to be the godfather of Rennes Le Chateau lore? Does that seem fair? Or should that title go to Pierre Plantard?
Well, I don't know if fair is the word, but I suppose it's true in that he fed the material to Desaid, and Desaid was the first person to write a book about it. There had been newspaper articles, but he wrote a book and generated a small interest in France, and then I picked it up in 1969, and I suppose if I hadn't made my first film for the BBC, nobody would ever have heard of Rennes Le Chateau. So yes, I suppose I could be called the grandfather of it all.
It goes back to, that's 1972, isn't it?
72 was when the first film went out. Of course, I was working on it for about 2 years before that. But the first film was broadcast in February 72. And, it got a fairly strong reaction, so we continued with it. There was obviously more to discover, and I'm still waiting for genuine discoveries over all these years. Everything has been wishful thinking, guesswork. I'm waiting for people to make a genuine discovery. I am no longer interested in hypotheses. I'm only interested in that which is demonstrable and provable. And now that we've got that, then there are only three people who've made genuine discoveries.
And who are they?
The three people that I consider to have made genuine, provable discoveries. The first was David Wood, who saw the film in which I first presented the geometry which I'd found hidden here. And he wrote a book developing that geometry. And I confess that had he not, I would never have realized that the geometry went beyond what I'd already found, which was the Pentacle of Mountains here, which is demonstrable and provable. So without his discovery, I think I wouldn't have realized that it went further. Unfortunately, he is locked to his one, what he calls the extended pentacle. He can't see the rest of it, which is a pity because his expertise is very good. If he turned his mind to what is beyond his small piece, he might have found some very interesting things. However, that's David Wood. The other was the was a mathematics teacher who read an article which I had written for a magazine in which I asked the readers to look for the church measure, the defining measure of the Rennes geometry. And she found the lot, hexagon and pentagon, in the north of France. Though she didn't know she'd found it. She just found the repetition of the measure which I asked her to look for. And I was able to identify the hexagon and pentagon there. And of course the other more important one was Erling Holmsen, who'd been working on Bornholm and had discovered the same geometry there, didn't realize its connections. It's over the work that we've done since that we've now established the connections between that geometry in the Baltic and what's happening down here. The link is not even, well, it's hardly known at all to the French, the link with Danish. Because, of course, the great Burgundian families who are at the origin of all mystification around this story, the grey old legends, the establishment of the Templars through Bernard of Clairvaux, people like all those great Burgundian families, their origin was on the island of Bornholm. That isn't known very well in France.
Do you consider there to be a mystery associated with Rennes Le Chateau, aside from the pentagonal geometry?
I don't know whether the word's mystery or mystification. I think that this place, because it's very special nature, and because of what I found, it is a very special place, and so I think it has been surrounded by mysteries for a very, very long time. And it's very hard to know why the mystification has been piled onto it.
There's a famous quote of Gerard de Said, I believe it was 1970, when you asked why he had published the parchments in his book, but not decoded them. And he said, because we thought it might interest someone like you to find it for yourself. After all these years, how do you reflect back upon that statement? Was Plantard aware of just what he was involved in?
Well, it's hard to know, again, of course, because now you're asking me to guess, and your guess is as good as mine. And I'm only interested in that which is demonstrable and provable. I'm no longer into hypotheses. And so to guess what the said might have meant or what Plantard might have known, my guesses aren't any more valid than anybody else's. But I have a suspicion, if you might want me to explore possibilities, that what did they mean by someone like me? Someone with access to the media? After all, I was a writer for television. But no, it wouldn't seem that. Someone who was capable of finding the secret recipes. Because after all, the very first one, it's such babyish child's play. I'm amazed that people can look at it and not see it. But then most people do look at the reproductions of those parchments and don't see it. So maybe they were looking for someone like me with my curious sort of mind who would be able to unravel some of the things which they themselves could no longer understand. I must admit I have certain evidence which implies that.
Do you think that Plantard was manipulating de Said? And if so, do you think de Said was aware of that?
I have certain indications that that could have been the case. And that de Said may not have been aware. This takes us to the question of de Said, who in 1975, I think it was, offered to sell me pictures of the treasure discovered by Baron de Saunière, which he said he had seen and was prepared to let me have photographs of.
What were the pictures of?
Maybe I should go into that in some detail if you like this sort of story.
Yes, please.
Well, I was preparing the second film, and I received a letter from the set saying, I just heard you're making a second film, so I think you'll find it interesting to know that one of my colleagues and myself have discovered the treasure found by Baron de Saunière, and I'm prepared to offer you photographs of the seven pieces of treasure. And he gave me a telephone number and asked me to ring him, thinking probably that I would be excited. Naturally, you think that somebody offers you access to the treasure, hooray! However, I don't react like that. I sent him a simple note saying, I find your letter interesting, tell me more. And so a week later, I got another letter from him, this time saying that he was prepared to not give me the photographs, but a 10-minute sound film of himself presenting the eight pieces of treasure.
How strange.
Very strange, because in the first letter it had been seven pieces of treasure, and now he was offering to provide me with film of himself presenting eight pieces of treasure and for me to broadcast on the BBC. Therefore, he must have thought it was genuine himself. Otherwise, he would not have wanted to expose himself on the BBC presenting something that was a fake.
Was this for The Priest, the Painter, and the Devil, 1974?
That's probably the case, yes. I think it must be. So he must have thought it was genuine because he was prepared to expose himself with it. I, however, was quite certain that it was a fake, and so I didn't respond to his letter. I merely filed it and forgot it. I suppose with hindsight it was a little foolish of me. I should have let him do it. But I'm not interested in that sort of level of sensationalism and playing games. I knew he was trying to play a game with me. But perhaps it wasn't him, it was somebody who was behind him. At that stage, I didn't know of the existence of Plantard. So obviously somebody had convinced de Sade that he had a genuine treasure. He in turn tried to convince me, but I didn't rise to the bait. So de Sade and his colleague, who proved to be a man called Jean-Luc Chaumet, who is now wheeled out as the so-called expert on the Rennes Château story. Though I think one has to approach his expertise with some degree of caution, as he himself offered with de Sade. He was the colleague who was going to sell me the pictures of the treasure. Because I didn't take it, he wrote an article for a magazine called Charivari saying, "The treasure is real, I have seen it." And that was obviously untrue. Some strange mystifications being wrapped around this story, and that is why nothing from the story of Rennes Château is reliable. Absolutely everything is either hearsay or invention. There is very little which is not hearsay or invention, and so should be regarded with extreme caution. There are no facts. We don't know anything, for instance, even about Béranger Saunière. At least I don't know anything about Béranger Saunière. Apart from his name, everything else is hearsay, totally unreliable.
Is this why you say don't believe a word of it in your
Absolutely.
Lectures?
Absolutely. Yes, don't believe a word. And by that, I don't mean I'm telling you lies. When I say don't believe a word, I say. I'm not telling you lies. I'm saying go out and prove it for yourself. Don't believe it just because I say it. The only things I ask you to believe are the things which are demonstrable and provable, and I give you the mathematics, boring though they are.
Henry, can I ask you to comment on the international sensation that Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code has caused? Not dissimilar to the sensation that you have caused with some of your books in the past. How has the study of Rennes Le Château changed since that phenomenon?
Oh, well, of course, now people are coming and saying, asking, where is Mary Magdalene buried? Some maniacs have written a book saying Jesus is buried near here. This is rubbish. This is absolute. There is not the tiniest fragment of evidence for any of this. But yes, that the Da Vinci Code phenomenon, well, it happened because, again, as we did 25 years ago, touched a nerve, part of the zeitgeist. And of course now with the growth in feminism, everybody gets very excited about the idea of Mary Magdalene and the suppression of the feminine in the church, and so on and so on. But when we wrote Holy Blood, Holy Grail, 20-odd years ago, the reaction to it was just as strong as if it had never been heard of before. But in fact, it was nothing new at all. The only thing original in our book was that the blood descent from Jesus and Mary Magdalene continued. 20 years pass, and a new generation grows up, especially those who were too young to read the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail, and weren't even born. And so the new story hits them as if it's never been said before. And every 20 years, it comes back again as if it's never been said before. And it's nonsense to react in the way that's presently going on. Brown's book is nothing more than a sort of not very good thriller draped around just the simple idea of a blood descent from Jesus.
What did you think of the film?
I haven't seen it. I'm interested. I might go and have a look at it to see how McKellen plays me. Which I'm told is what he's supposed to be doing.
I like it. I can see you in that performance. Were you surprised that Michael Bajant took Dan Brown to court?
No.
Do you think he really thought he could win?
I suppose so. I haven't any interest in it. I can't see the point.
Are you still in touch with Michael Bajant and Richard Lee?
No.
Can I ask how you would characterize your relationship with them today?
It doesn't exist.
Are you on good terms, but just not actively keeping in touch, or were things left?
No, we just, we have no contact.
Sure. Well, I hope and trust that the Da Vinci Code has only added to your own legend and...
Well, it's attracted more people to the story because those who are genuinely interested very quickly get led to Holy Blood, Holy Grail. And those who aren't, well, after all, they've had a thriller. It's a pity it isn't better.